It's 11 o'clock on Saturday night, but when you're on the quest for liberty, you never get the weekends off. And now, your host of Liberty on the Air, Mr. Dan Fishman.
Thank you very much. Matt McLaughlin in studio with Ken Van Tassel and John Gasbo joining us in the seat number four. It might be seat number one, depending on which way you're counting from, but either way, we're happy to have you here, bring something new to the conversation.
And a very special intro from our...
Will, thank you very much. And Liberty on the Air, I'm your host, Dan Fishman. You want to join us in the conversation, the number is 617-266-6868. You can send us a text to 680-680. You can tweet us at Liberty on the Air, visit our website, libertyontheair.com, or join the live stream that's going on Facebook right now. So our live stream has been pretty popular. We've been doing about 2,000 views a show, which is pretty exciting. And one of the exciting things about that is that it's another way that you can immediately respond to us. And so today I'm hoping that we're going to have much more of a dialogue because we're talking about current events. This is not a straight up liberty topic, but I think the biggest news story of this week, well, the biggest news story, except for the actual news stories, is the Harvey Weinstein scandal. It's been blowing up. I'm not sure who was the first actress to blow it. I think it was Rose McGowan who started talking about it.
I think she mentioned it. A while ago, she said the allegations out, but there's been so it was the New York Times ran the story about a week ago,
right?
Pharaoh, yeah.
Hollywood Reporter had apparently been sitting on the story for several years, trying to get it to go, and I think that we also had various instances of where some newspapers had the story for a long time, and then people contacted them and asked them to not
run the story.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's one of the interesting things about it. But first, let's talk about, you know, what he's actually accused of. He's accused of using his influence. He's accused of making a difference in terms of pulling people from radio, pulling them from shows, from movies, and then asking people to trade sexual favors for his promotion of their career.
Was he actually was that the thing? I thought he was just sort of skeeving on young actresses. I thought he was I don't know if he was actually trading. I think he was – there were people that were hoping to work with him. I don't know if anything was ever actually traded, doesn't make it better or worse. It's all awful.
There is that one tape where you hear him like clearly being kind of forceful with this one actress. I don't remember. Or was a model.
I haven't heard this yet.
Yeah, it was part of the New Yorker expose that Pharaoh did, and it was some audio that was released where you can clearly hear Weinstein being like, get in here, like it was a very intimidating thing. I mean, that's the only modicum of evidence we have at the moment, but that's kind of like evidence with air quotes.
Right. I mean, it's Cosby-level evidence, right?
Yeah, I think so.
The volume of accusations at this point in time are pretty high. I saw Asia Argento, who's claiming that she was actually raped. I think a few other actresses are talking about it. Rose McGowan, you know, it's very interesting. She talks about it. She doesn't act anymore, right? She completely left the business. And, you know, she talks about
it. No, she actually had a show that was about to be produced by Amazon. She actually sent an email to Jeff Bezos. I don't know if it was before or after this broke. I'm not sure the exact timeline. But basically complaining about one of the other executives at Amazon who is in charge of the video production, who has sort of been put on leave for things. He has the thing was sexual harassment, you know.
Right.
But so she's obviously sort of very vocal, as well she should be. But everyone was quiet. Like a week ago, 10 days ago, I think it was pretty interesting that Oliver Stone, one of the nation's largest purveyors of truth and morality and justice and good taste, when the Weinstein story first sort of broke, he was sort of blowing it off.
Right.
He was sort of like – and then since it actually caught traction, he was like, oh, no, I've been traveling. I didn't really it's awful.
Sure. And I mean, he's not the first, right? I mean, several other people have come out. Jane Fonda came out and said that she sort of had an inkling about it and she hadn't said anything about it. And then, of course, most interesting, Hillary Clinton – who received a tremendous amount of money from the Weinstein for her campaign from Harvey Weinstein, came out and said, you know, this is just horrible that a man would do something like this.
Yeah, isn't it, Hillary?
Abuse his powerful situation.
Which I find fascinating. I mean, I don't think – how does she have any credibility on this?
Right.
And how do some of her supporters have credibility on this issue? Because there are allegations that – I mean, it's obviously not quite the same, but there's a 30, 40-year-old rape allegation from Juanita Broderick on Bill Clinton when he was – going back when he was governor.
Yep.
And stories that – I mean, and either Hillary or other – obviously knew about the allegations.
Right.
So
– and certainly, I mean, you know, Monica Lewinsky – didn't say that she didn't complain, but at one point in time, there was a statement that, you know, there cannot be a consensual relationship between the president of the United States and a 22-year-old girl.
Well, that was the that's the old, you know, sort of 80s and 90s logic that came out, you know, feminism, that a boss and anyone underneath him, a person of lesser power, that no matter how consensual it was, that was still wrong and an abuse of power.
Well, and so that leads us.
But not in that case. No, that one was fine.
Well, right. But so that leads us to an interesting question because, you know, the sexual harassment is a delicate issue, and we dance around the issues of political correctness at various points in time. And so, do we believe that there can never be a workplace relationship, that sort of thing is always wrong?
What do you mean?
I mean, well, I think that the lines are not really necessarily about can yes or no, can there be a workplace relationship? I think it's around which sort of behavior is right. And if you look at what Weinstein has been documented as doing, which is basically trying to coerce people into somehow being attracted to him when they're not attracted to him, not because of who he is, but because of his power, that's the core of the problem here.
Right.
And I think when you want to talk seriously about this issue, it needs to be focused on yes or no, is somebody in the workplace coercing another person? It's not just on its face, is it a workplace element, yes or no, but it's also like, I think it's important to come down on these situations of coercion when you're trying to force somehow somebody to be...
Yeah, I think that sort of also puts up on something you mentioned, Dan, is it's not that Weinstein just had the power to coerce these poor women and maybe the power to either cast them or he was so powerful that no one would believe them or he could ruin their careers. He also had the power not only as a large donor to the Democratic Party but also as someone who ran a lot of ads in newspapers. Like NBC supposedly had this story several years ago and opted not. Like one of the things that Harvey Weinstein apparently did was – I mean because he ran so many ads for his movies and he also apparently – some of the guys that were sort of in charge of whether or not the story would run – those guys like to think of themselves as screenwriters, and Harvey Weinstein let them keep that idea that they were screenwriters. So he had the power to sort of squash stories from the get-go.
And he used some of the star power too, right? Because supposedly Matt Damon called
And Russell Crowe. But so that my understanding of that, this is not necessarily a defense of Matt Damon, but was that – that was about a story about a guy who was getting a lot of money from the Weinstein Company in Italy, who the story was supposedly about him and how he had no expertise in the movie industry and basically how he was just there to get expensive women for Harvey.
Right.
And Matt Damon's story at the time and now is that he was just someone – Harvey called him up and, of course, you know, and just said, hey, they're doing a hatchet job on so-and-so. Can you call this? But still, it was Harvey that was the one, that guy that basically said, hey, who basically quasi-tory at the time.
Right. He's essentially using his power. Now, an interesting question. Did he coerce Matt Damon? Did Matt Damon feel like, oh, I need to help Harvey out so that I don't lose my my private projects? Because, I mean, Harvey Weinstein made them stars, right? He produces Good Will Hunting. They owe him something along the way. And so the interesting question then, of course, is that the next thing is that now we see other celebrities either owning up, like Ben Affleck came out and said, you know, I groped this woman on
he was sort of called out on that. He didn't just bring it up on his own.
No, you're right. And actually, it was very interesting because I think the pattern that I saw was that one person tweeted and said, you know, I don't think that anybody remembered, but Ben Affleck groped.
Hillary Burton, I believe.
Hillary Burton.
On TRL, yeah.
Yeah, on TRL. Yeah. And he said, and nobody remembers that. And Hillary Burton responded immediately, said, I remember. and then Ben issued the non-apology apology, and has now checked into rehab. So,
yeah.
I do think that we're going to see a lot more of this, and that we're going to see people complaining, and in my opinion, rightly so, about the fact that there has been an imbalance of power. There's an expectation that in the workplace, or there has been an expectation in the workplace for a long time, that men, I don't want to say men actually, but that there are people in power who are abusing their power. And it hasn't just been women who have been victimized of this. Terry Crews came out.
James Vanderbeek,
right, from Dawson's Creek.
Rob Schneider,
which is,
Corey Feldman, way back.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He talked about it on The View, and I saw this earlier today.
He says that there was a lot of
really
skeeviness going on when they were, like, you know.
Yeah, and like when he was on The View, Barbara Walters like scoffed at him, like, "Oh, you're looking to take down a bunch of powerful people." Like, well, now at the point we're trying to see a lot of people trying to take down.
You know what? It's interesting because I remember like when Jose Canseco first started talking about juicing in baseball, and everyone's like, "Oh, there's nothing going on, nothing going on." Of course, now we know that
canary in a coal mine.
Exactly. Yeah. So we got Scott on the line from Worcester. Scott, you want to talk about Harvey Weinstein? I'm going to put a caveat on here, Scott.
Yes.
Don't talk about George Soros.
No, I'm not going to talk about George Soros.
Good. Tell me what you got.
You know, gentlemen, good evening. Harvey Weinstein is nothing new, and the notorious Hollywood casting couch is nothing new. Look at the history of Hollywood. Daryl Zanuck owned 20th Century Fox. He had sex with lots of starlets, and so did Jack Warner, who owned Warner Brothers, and Samuel Goldwyn, who owned Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. You know, Hollywood has always been a brothel, a cesspool, and a sewer, has no ethics and no morals, has been for a long time liberal and radical, and Hollywood has always been typically Jewish and unscrupulous. That's the way it is.
You know? Okay. That was good, Scott. You were going
We knew where
really
he was
well
going.
We know that eventually he's going to get to that point, and so that's usually where the thing off. But I tell you, Scott, you know, for your references were good in the beginning. Daryl Zanuck, I wouldn't have thought to bring that up, but Jack Warner, absolutely.
And I honestly don't know. I mean, I think the casting couch obviously is an old story, but I don't know how much. I don't know enough about but Jack Warner and those guys, but so, that almost doesn't matter.
So here's the thing. Mm. Let's take the power part of it out of the component.
Right.
Okay? Because as liberty people, we often say, you know, how can it be illegal to give something away for free? How can it be illegal to sell something that you can give away for free? Our feeling generally on prostitution, sex work, libertarians generally say people should be able to do what they want.
Legalize it.
Yeah. Legalize is generally where we are. So if there were an open contract and somebody said, I'm making all these movies and, I'm happy to put people in them, but I'll be frank, part of what I want to get paid in, part of the trade, part of the contract is going to be, some relationship, something like that. People own their bodies. The problem is that when it becomes coercive, when people are in the industry and it's not part of the contract, it's not stated up front, people have the right that when they engage in a contract to see everything on the paper beforehand. And that is something that Harvey Weinstein was clearly not doing. He was abusing his power.
If you're there for acting, you're there for acting. You're not there for a fake relationship with Harvey Weinstein, right?
Exactly right.
And I will tell you, I left Texas, and I left Florida, and I left Louisiana, and I went to Puerto Rico, and I met with the president of the Virgin Islands. These are people that are incredible people. They've suffered gravely, and we'll be there. We're going to be there. We have really, it's not even a question of a choice. We don't even want a choice. We're going to be there as Americans, and we love those people and what they've gone through. And they're all healing.
Honestly, it's just baffling to me. Liberty on the Air, WRKO, AM 680, The Talk of Boston. Please give us your phone call, 617-266-6868. The first interesting thing about it, of course, is when Donald Trump said that he spoke to the president of the Virgin Islands, which, of course, the Virgin Islands are in American territory, so their president is Donald Trump. First question I'm going to put out there, did he actually mean he was talking to himself? Because I'm sure that he does. I'm sure that Donald Trump is soothed by the sound of the voice he loves the most. So
in reality, that's probably what happens in every single conversation that he's in, is he just talks to himself and hopes the other person gets it.
In fairness, he probably meant the governor, but
right.
This is the type of off-the-cuff kind of talking that Donald Trump has made a staple of his presidency, and that a lot of his advisors have been trying to wean him off of.
Right.
But I think more politicians would make gaffes like this if they did talk off the cuff as much as Donald Trump does.
Well, so it's interesting. I mean, obviously, you know, George Bush Jr. is the king of the gaffes. I'm sure you remember the, I know how hard it is for you to put food on your children. That's a, one of my favorites. And a few other classics along
the way. It's challenging. They move around
well, but, right. quickly. But to be fair, right, he was dyslexic. So reading from a teleprompter or a speech was potentially
useful. Does dyslexia make you transpose entire words?
It doesn't necessarily make you transpose entire words, but it can mean that, you know, you've gotten things flipped up, and when you take your eyes off the text, you can misremember what you see.
Sure.
I sometimes feel like I was conditioned by President Bush to pronounce nuclear. Sometimes I just let a nuclear fly.
Right.
You know?
Well, I mean, that is a geographic pronunciation for sure. There's an area of the country in which people say nuclear.
Nuclear,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's an area of the country where people say Washington. So all that being said, I thought it was a stunning week for the president in terms of talking about the Virgin Islands, talking about the fact that, you know, we don't even want – what did he say? We don't want a reason to be there. We're just going to be there. The idea – and yet – you know, he also criticized Puerto Rico, right? He said that we can't stay in Puerto Rico forever.
But I mean, they only have one golf course. I mean, what are we going to do?
It seems to me like this would be a perfect opportunity to expand. I mean, honestly, if he's a construction guy, right, came up in construction.
You would think.
Isn't this the opportunity of a lifetime?
I mean, how many Puerto Ricans can you fit in a Trump Tower? That's my question.
He's doing PR events next to models of his wall, so that's probably still his priority.
Now, by PR, you don't mean Puerto Rico events.
No, public relations.
Public relations events.
Yeah, that kind of thing, media events. I don't know. See, the thing about he's being spicy towards Puerto Rico because the San Juan mayor is talking all kinds of trash to him.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, he's probably not getting that kinds of trash talk from the Virgin Islands, but part of me thinks that if we're talking about disaster relief, this is an opportunity for him to play to a bias that he has, whereas Puerto Rico has lots of Hispanic and lower income people, so he is going to do them dirty. Virgin Islands has lots more white rich people, so he's going to do them nice. I know that's controversial.
Puerto Rico is hugely in debt as well.
They have the same financial issues.
You would think that would make them appeal to Donald Trump, who understands, you know, accumulating massive debts, potentially defaulting on them, because at one point in time he said that he thought the solution that we were going to have to wipe out Puerto Rico's debts. And honestly, that's something that Puerto Rico, I don't know if they need it, but they want it. They need to know. They've been trying to get out from under these debts for a long time.
Well, one of Trump's staples is Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection under the government, but unfortunately, who's going to guarantee the debts of Puerto Rico if they default?
Right, exactly. You and I, the taxpayers. It's a fascinating point. Puerto Rico is in a unique place. I had the good fortune to talk to a friend today whose father lives in Puerto Rico in a luxury apartment building, and they still don't have power. He is going down to the local river to get water, carrying it back up to his house.
I believe this morning on the I heard on the news that 90% of Puerto Rico is still without power.
Yeah. Right. It's awful. I remember when the hurricane first hit, the storm first hit, there was a business CEO of a company. I don't remember where. He was a Puerto Rican. He's from Puerto Rico, and basically he was saying that, you know, Puerto Rico is just an awful place. Like, it's full of corruption, and if you want to help, avoid the government at all cost. Avoid the local government at all cost was sort of what he had said. I think he stepped back a little bit from that, but
So what you're saying is that it's actually a libertarian paradise. I mean, it is interesting because so
– no, like, water, no power? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm saying that
– No water, no power, no money?
Maybe paradise might be a strong word.
Only in the luxury condos.
But – you know, it's interesting to head out of the ruins of Detroit, a real libertarian sprout was planted. And you see a lot of businesses and a lot of regulations being rolled back
all over the place
to see
municipal
what are coming
bankruptcy.
Up. I wonder, yeah, exactly. And I wonder if there's is that opportunity in Puerto Rico. I mean, having been to Puerto Rico, it's beautiful. I would encourage people that when they get a chance to go there, do some vacations, stuff like that.
Repeal the Jones Act.
Repeal the Jones Act.
Yeah.
Puerto Rico will be back, just like us. So, in the president's no good, very bad week where he was talking to himself in the mirror, he also gave himself some interesting advice on Iran, right? He has decided that he's going to decertify the Iran deal.
Didn't he run on that?
He did run on saying that he was going to do it. Well, actually, he ran on saying that it was the worst deal of all time. But
well, if he didn't make it, it's probably a terrible, awful, no big deal.
And if he said something was the worst, I mean, that man is very slow to hyperbole.
Well, you're right. You're right. I mean, that's a measured statement. But what's interesting about it, we touched on this before. The problem with this is that
we were the only people who knew it was a deal?
Well, that we are potentially on the brink of war with North Korea. Like at one point in time, I think the president said something, indicated that we were what was his statement to Rex Tillerson? Rexy, you're wasting time on diplomacy. There's only one thing so North Koreans
wasting
are going to understand.
Breath.
Well, it's funny. It's you mentioned diplomacy, and as a what many people consider a peaceful man, as a Mr. Spock from Star Trek once had a great quote that said, I often found the purpose of diplomacy was to prolong a crisis.
Interesting. Well, I don't recall.
It's an original series quote.
Yes,
I believe from
episode
the Mark,
57.
No, the Mark of Gideon was the episode.
Ah, all right. Good,
I believe.
Good to know.
If anyone can correct me or wants to correct me, please call in at 617-266-6868.
There are no Star Trek fans up at 11:35 at night, but maybe. Maybe there's some online who can correct
probably
us on this.
20.
But so the point is that if Trump wants to decertify the Iran plan, we talked about this beforehand, he essentially wants to say, you know what? Even North Korea, if you make a treaty with us, a nuclear treaty, we may invalidate it later on.
Mm. I don't know if that's – I mean, treaty with Iran was pretty – I mean,
listen,
A, there was no – I mean, A, it's not a treaty because it wasn't ratified by Congress.
You're right. It was a lifting of sanctions.
It was a sort of very one-sided deal put in by somebody who only wanted a W in the column.
I'm as against the treaty as anybody was. I mean, I was really strongly against the treaty.
It's not really a treaty.
Well, I mean, it certainly is it's for Iran, right? I mean, they agreed to constrain their nuclear ambitions.
Where was the treaty signed?
I mean, I don't know that a treaty has to have a signature, right? I mean, there can be agreements along the way. Is there – people sit down and actually change pieces of paper back and forth and stuff like that? I don't know. But you're right. It's not one of the
problems with it. So if he sort of actually follows the rule of law, which is weird, and does that, and then – I mean, if your fear is that North Korea is going to be like, ooh, can we trust him? Like
– right. I mean, I don't think they do, but
Well, I always get the impression that when Obama went into this, I think his idea was to aid in nuclear deproliferation. I think the position of people who are allied with
by
Trump
letting
here,
someone get nuclear.
Well, see, the PR, the optics on it was supposed to be that, oh well, we're trying to curb Iran's
nuclear. Optics.
Plan.
Oh yeah, sure.
That was the optics.
Yeah.
What the deal did, I'm a little cloudier on that. I think that the goal of deproliferation is important, but I think that the reason why Trump wants it undone is he thinks he's going to be able to make a stronger deal with Iran. I think that's a little naive on his end.
Well, I think he actually wants to just or maybe not just him. I mean, I'm assuming it's other Republicans that actually want to – I mean part of this deal that Obama put into place was the idea that was like, hey guys, you can't be having like nuclear centrifuges and we're going to go in and check them. And Iran was like, no, we'll check them and tell you we don't have them. Like it's you know, and that's not really a deal. That's like saying that's like Harvey Weinstein saying, you know what? I'll just take this meeting by myself with this actress. You know, it's you know, I mean, we can all just trust that it's all gonna go fine and above board.
You can't trust Iran. Iran has a history of supporting terrorism around the world. There's no question about that. Iran is at various points in time has been an extremely bad actor.
Which is why they've never won an Oscar.
Right, and why Harvey Weinstein won't work with them. However,
right now.
It also has a groundswell of very liberal-minded young people in its population.
Yeah, it's absolutely
which
true.
Is not immaterial.
It's not immaterial, but it's interesting. I mean, they're being pretty oppressed at this point in time, too.
Exactly.
I mean, it's very difficult
That's
for them
true.
To come out. Right, there was a professor recently who was executed for suggesting that homosexuality was not actually an illegal. And as it turns out, suggesting that is illegal in Iran. All that being said, the Iran deal now, and again, it's not over, right? When the president decertifies it, that means that it goes back to Congress, and now Congress is going to have a chance to Congress.
It basically just tells Iran that they're not compliant, regardless of what they're doing. Right.
Right? So just to be clear, we're talking about this is called the Joint Comprehension Plan of Action, agreement between the P5 plus one powers and Iran. Was agreed to in Geneva, so that's where it was signed, on the 24th.
P5 plus one powers. It sounds like a fantastic British boy pop band.
Early '90s.
Yep.
That has a collaboration with a K-pop band from South Korea.
Oh, sounds nice.
P5 plus one. P5 plus one, it refers to the
UN. We glued them both together and shipped them to Iran.
The P5 plus one refers to the UN Security Council's five permanent members, China, France, Russia, the United Kingdom, and the United States, plus Germany, which is fair because they wouldn't have been included because they just lost the war. Wow. So they couldn't have been in the United Nations at the beginning, but now they're including them in.
So now there are plus one.
Yes.
It's like a wedding invitation.
Exactly right.
Come on in.
The nice thing about it is that you can be pretty sure that they'll be punctual at least. So that's what you want in a plus one. So this is the people who sign off. And that's the interesting thing about it too, is that the U.S. pulling out of this agreement doesn't necessarily end the agreement. Europe can go on without us. And that's also part of the stipulation, that Europe can continue to trade, go back and forth. And there's some talk that the United States might actually do that, where we pull out of it because Trump gets what he wants, but Europe continues to go on with it, and we don't impose what we had imposed previously, which is refusing to trade with anybody who then trades with Iran. Because if we still allow the rest of Europe to trade with Iran, it's not that penalizing for them. Mm. Trump fulfills the campaign promise, and
Iran is still nuclear in 15 years.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, but it's for power, Matt.
Leads to an interesting question too. Is that is our purpose to prevent every other country in the world from gaining nuclear power?
Well, I think the purpose of that deal was so. If that's your line of thinking, then you don't like this deal at all then. Because that's the point of that's the entire point of the deal.
I was very much against the deal in the beginning because I do believe that it gives Iran a quicker path to nuclear power than they had in other places. And I don't think that they have earned the right to be trusted. Because the fact that, you know, like I said, they're
basically John Hammond in Jurassic Park.
So it's Team America World Police's job to decide who earns the right to use nuclear power now.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting question because we talk about proportional response. So in Iran sponsoring acts of terrorism, right? I mean, they send people with bombs to blow things up. Saudi Arabia doesn't have nuclear weapons.
You don't think some people consider what the U.S. has done with drone strikes in foreign countries acts of terrorism when they kill innocent people in those countries?
I consider them acts of terrorism.
So why are we allowed to have?
Because nobody can stop us.
Exactly.
But.
Well, we also invented that.
That's a realistic conversation.
Well, we stole a bunch of scientists from Germany. Yeah,
no, but that's not a
statement. Steal those scientists from Germany. They left. they were actually pushed out. Well, we talked
that's
about
why
that
I hope none of them show up to this meeting because they're going to be there trying to help them. They're going to be like, "Oh, you're doing it wrong."
Well, but so that's the interesting thing about it, is that what we're really talking about is a suppression of knowledge and a suppression of really sort of basic machinery, because to make these weapons at this point in time,
so simple.
Yeah, well, it's not so simple. Like, I mean, we were doing
I saw a YouTube video. A guy made a nuclear centrifuge in his basement. All right.
Well, sure. I mean, a centrifuge you can make. I mean, refining uranium, getting the stuff. There's effort involved. It's not impossible. But when we talk about our suppression, we say, okay, you know, I mean, we're not talking about, I mean, Saudi Arabia, terrible, terrible country, terrible laws. They're not pursuing nuclear ambitions. They don't have to because we, I believe, made the largest arms deal in the history of the world with them relatively
They're too busy training the females in the country to drive right now. So,
yeah, well, I'm going to leave that aside, but there is a question about, you know, Iran looks at North Korea and they see how we deal with North Korea and how different that is. And they say, oh, they got nuclear weapons. That's why they want nuclear weapons, because nuclear weapons gains them some autonomy. And so there's at least an argument to be made that if we didn't care about that, if we gave Iran more power, they wouldn't want nuclear weapons. I don't think they can be trusted with nuclear weapons, but I'm throwing that out there, that idea that if they didn't feel like they needed nuclear weapons, they might be more willing to put aside their ambition.
How do you feel in general about the economic and financial sanctions against Iran in the first place?
It's tough. I mean, you know,
it seems kind of unlibertarian.
Who right? really gets hurt by sanctions? So first of all, are sanctions
consumers
effective?
In both countries, right?
Yeah, are sanctions really effective against a poor nation? I don't think so. Because the people who are living in poverty, they're already living in poverty. It hasn't made a big difference. Is it effective against the rich people of the country? Not really, because they have other options. They're not constrained just by what's going on inside of their borders. I mean, we do a good job sometimes of trying to hunt down international accounts. We froze the Russian assets. We froze Iranian assets. Countries that we are angry with. Probably my air quotes don't come over radio very well. But
No, they're fine.
Okay. The sanctions fundamentally are an act of aggression as well. Are they a response? Are they initiation of force? I don't think so. I think that, you know, our sanctions against Iran are based on the fact that we know that Iran did a lot of really terrible things. I mean, not just, you know, supporting Hamas or Hezbollah, whichever one they support. Not just being involved in supporting terrorism in Iraq against American troops, but also that they are actively suppressing their own population. Is it our business to get involved in that? I don't know.
I mean, I tend to be more non-interventionist on a matter of principle rather than circumstance. I mean, like, you can qualify sanctions are okay against this, that, the other country because circumstance all you want. But from a libertarian standpoint, should we be doing sanctions against anybody? Should we be having troops anywhere? Should we be selling arms to any country? I think the answer to all those questions is no. Maybe that's too simple, but that's just principle for me.
So what about the idea that, you know, if you saw an act of aggression happening on the street, you would probably intervene, right?
To try and defend a victim, yeah. Maybe. I'm a pacifist, so I might not be that bold.
Would you say something?
Perhaps, yeah.
Maybe a domestic violence case, would you?
Well, that's micro. Well, this is that you're talking about micro action, but yep. These sanctions, they're macro action, and they're done on behalf of populations of millions of people, not all of whom would agree with those decisions.
It's true that not all people would agree with the decision, but is there some argument that your actions, that macro actions, when we talk about preventing, you know, notoriously bad actors, Syria, right? Mm-hmm. What was George Bush's axis of evil? Syria, Iran, and North Korea?
North Korea. Yeah.
Okay. If we talk about those countries and their actions in the world, is there a benefit to saying, like, North Korea right now, we talked about this the other day, they're firing missiles over Japan. I would call that aggression. Do we need
foreboding.
To wait to the point? I mean, this is Donald Trump's argument. They may have a nuclear weapon. They might have had only one and detonated it to prove that they had it. Do we need to wait till they get 20? I mean, how far do we need to let them go? You know, they're firing missiles over Japan that 3 years ago they were crashing into the ocean. Mm-hmm.
Well, you could make a more credible argument that I think in those situations to take that as aggression and react appropriately, wouldn't the onus be on Japan? Wouldn't the onus be on China instead of on us? You know what I mean? It's like I've always disputed this impulse to make America the center of every single conflict.
Well, but
I mean, Ron Paul did that.
Yeah,
that was central to his thing.
I mean, if Japan, so first of all, obviously Japan is forbidden.
Yeah, I don't think
by treaty with us.
Their end target is in Japan.
It's not, but
I mean, the stated goal is to hit the United States.
Well, they want to show that they can fire a missile a long time.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know, if I'm firing a gun over your head saying that I'm shooting at birds, you could rightly complain. Well, you know, what happens if you drop your aim by a little bit or, you know, something?
Well, are there birds above me?
No. I'm sure North Korea with their nukes is probably trying to skeet shoot at Guam.
Yeah, like, I'm not saying Japan shouldn't be freaked out by it. Should be like, oh, no, we're fine. Because, I mean,
right. I mean, sirens went off in northern Japan
if
missile attack.
A nuclear missile goes off anywhere. I mean, it's a game changer. I mean, how does anyone react to that?
Well,
you know.
So let's say that the objective is deproliferation of nuclear weapons. So let's operate with the assumption then that okay, well, we should react to international activities with the goal of attaining deproliferation. And like I said earlier with Obama, and you mentioned that you believe, Matt, that Obama went into this deal just to get a notch in the win column. I think just the same, I think Trump is trying to get us out of that deal just to get a notch in the win column, because I think it's naive of him, Donald Trump, to think that he is any position where he is right now to create a better nuclear deal with Iran. I don't think he's going to be able to do that.
I definitely think that we're talking about an administration that's desperate for a win.
For sure.
I don't think that you can point to anything that they've done, right? They failed on health care, this last executive order.
Everything's going great.
Puerto Rico was a disaster.
You got to go on a great vacation. You visited Florida, visited New Orleans, visited Puerto Rico.
I went to Virgin Islands, sir.
Most people would kill for a vacation like that.
So maybe those are wins in your book. But for me, I think we're talking about an administration that would be pretty psyched to have something come out, something to deliver, some promise they could have delivered on. We did this. And maybe the Iran deal.
The Obamacare EO with Rand Paul. I mean, he influenced that greatly. Maybe that could be a win in the long term.
I don't know. All we know is that at least for right now, they're still looking. Are you thinking your customers would like to know more about your business? Are you thinking that you just need to reach out and get that important 11 p.m. Saturday night demographic? You could. You could be advertising on Liberty on the Air. We'd like to be reading your advertisement right now. High quality forms production. Ken could do some impersonations.
Talk as smoothly as you just did.
Exactly. This is what we are. We are nothing if not radio talk show professionals. But
in the raw.
Yeah, at this point in time. Think of all the businesses that are on right now. I think we had 5,000 listeners, according to the last Nielsen numbers. You should be advertising with us. Email me directly, dan@libertyontheair.com. I'll cut you a deal. I know somebody on the station.
We'll only pay you in Girl Scout cookies, but that's okay.
Well, so that leads us to an interesting question. The Boy Scouts have decided that they are going to admit Girl Scouts. They're going to admit girls, and I guess it's just going to be called
scouting.
They're
not going to admit Girl Scouts. They're going to admit
girls. And the Girl Scouts are upset about this. Ken, you've got...
Yeah, they're more than upset. They released a statement to ABC News on Thursday, quote, "The Boy Scouts' house is on fire. Instead of addressing systemic issues of continuing sexual assault, financial mismanagement, and deficient programming, BSA senior management wants to add an accelerant to the house fire by recruiting girls."
So somebody crafted that statement, because someone else said adding accelerant to the fire.
Well, they're in all-out attack mode over this.
I thought learning to build fires was a Boy Scout thing, but apparently the Girl Scouts know about it too.
Maybe they're flocking to BSA to actually learn that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, it's interesting because I was a scout growing up, Cub Scouts, and then Boy Scouts. I think I went like one level beyond Tenderfoot. But a lot of camping, a lot of useful things. I learned how to boil water in a leaf, which is a remarkably practical skill that I've never used since, but was pretty awesome at the time. My first experience—
Come in handy when North Korea attacks.
Yeah, my first experience shooting was going to the Boy Scout range with my dad. I remember seeing him knock down targets with a .22. My dad, who was completely useless, but because that's what you think when you're 13 years old. But boy, he was awesome there. Scouting was a great positive experience in my life. I don't see any reason why I think it should be constrained to just boys.
I'm all in favor. I mean, I think this a little bit accelerates some of the conversations about gender. Like, kids questioning their gender, I think that's okay. I think kids should be allowed to be more honest with themselves. I think girls should be Boy Scouts. Boys should be Girl Scouts if they want.
Maybe we just have scouting, and you know what? We open up a whole bunch of merit badges.
Well, I think this points to actually the deficiencies of some of the Girl Scout programming, because it can vary a lot more over different Girl Scout troops. I've learned this talking to different Girl Scouts, being an Eagle Scout myself. And some Girl Scout troops find that they don't get any of the experiences they thought they were going to get, like real camping outdoors, learning how to survival skills that the BSA has really nailed down how to teach those very well.
And you know, I wonder how it extends into other, I don't even want to say traditional boy things, but for example, I know there's a computer merit badge for boys. I wonder if girls have the
equivalent. I did earn the radio merit badge.
All right.
I will throw that in there.
It's worked out. So
couldn't somebody just start the scouts? Like, I mean, I have been many things, but I've never been a Boy Scout. But I don't, I mean, there's an organization. I know it's
yes,
old and whatever, but couldn't someone just, you know,
they could. There are a few other, and there are a few other organizations.
I mean, maybe there are. I have no knowledge.
Campfire, Boys and Girls Club, stuff like that.
And there is a division of Boy Scouts called Venture Scouts, which has allowed female participants for a while.
Outstanding information. All right, I'm going to throw a controversial topic out there.
All right.
They want to replace Sweet Caroline at Fenway Stadium. If you were going to replace
Fenway Stadium?
What did I say?
That's where the Boston Patriots play.
Fenway Ballpark.
Football.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry.
Bases balls. I've been
up for a really long time. So, Fenway Ballpark.
Drop.
They play.
Drop the ball.
They saw, yes.
Fenway Park.
They play a song.
The ball goes through Fishman's legs.
Yes, and Bill Buckner rejoices because he's no longer. All right, you're missing your time. Who wants to replace Sweet Caroline?
I want to replace with Sweet Sweet Silence. Because it's a baseball game. Let's play some freaking baseball.
Would you get rid of Take Me Out to the Ball Game, too?
No, that's a tradition.
No, that's fine.
I think we should replace it with the ever-rebellious and anthemic Academy Fight Song by legendary Boston band Mission of Burma. It's a great one. You guys should check it out if you haven't heard.
Not familiar with that song.
They're a great band. Boston legends.
I think it should be replaced with the live version of Whipping Post, because baseball games are just too short. And I think a 22-minute song between innings would really just would really get us where we need
Stick
to be
the
on those
Freebird
times.
Guitar solo, just
yeah.
Just
Mission of Burma
right
played
in.
Fenway, by the way, open for Foo Fighters.
Interesting. See, I was thinking Hey Jude, but apparently that's a longer song. My actual thing was I was thinking the theme from SWAT. You know, just classic 70s television show, big horns blaring through the studio. I want to plug one more thing about the show. You want like what we're giving you in terms of the content, not doing a particularly good job today, but we have a Patreon account now. So go to patreon.com/libertyontheair. You can sponsor the show. We got special things for you. You can get live in studio via webcam with us. You can run a whole segment on the show, anything you want. patreon.com/libertyontheair. If you have any questions about it, we're going to post links on our website, links on Facebook. And we are going home.
Be libertarian with us.
Good night, Skippy. We miss you.
People talk about sin taxes. The government taxes cigarettes because it says smoking is bad, and they want less people to smoke. The government taxes alcohol because it says drinking is bad, and they want less people to drink. So why is the government taxing income? Join that discussion and lots more, and listen live to Liberty on the Air with your host, Dan Fishman, every Saturday night at 11 p.m. right here on The Voice of Boston, AM 680, WRKO.